And a pleasant good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Bullseye Saints Hour, an inside look at the black and gold Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, and they shall be tailgating on Sunday for real for the first time. And I don't know how it is where you are listening all across the New Orleans Saints radio network, but it is pleasant outside in New Orleans right now for a September 2nd.
It's jarring.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do with myself. Like, wait, I can walk out. I didn't sweat once today. I don't even know what that like, I didn't know that was possible in the month of, I guess it is September now. You turn the calendar from August to September, and the weather just, you know, obliges.
For one day.
Yes.
I wouldn't get too used to
That's a good point.
September is usually, it's September and October, the driest months along the Gulf Coast. But it's football. No more preseason. College is kicked off. Saints in Arizona, and I remember a few weeks ago, and the Saints made the trade with Colin Saunders for Luke Fortner, and I was like, whoa, that's a big deal, right? And they've had like 20 moves since. It's unbelievable the amount of activity this football has had since the start of the preseason games.
I guess. I feel like I just it seems that way every year. There's always a flurry of moves this time of year.
I don't,
right?
Yeah, it's just your, I think you do. You get guys and you from your practice squad roster or different guys. These guys are two-year active, and most of them backup offensive linemen.
I think why it feels like there's more is not necessarily that there's been more moves. It's that there's been more definitive moves of, you know, every move that we've seen the Saints make has just seemed to get more and more, hey, this is us leaning into a rebuild or a reset or whatever word the Saints organization feels the most comfortable with calling it. That's what it is. That's why you trade a veteran and say, hey, you were gonna have a second-year player as our backup nose tackle, right? That's why you cut JT Gray and say, hey, we have young players who want to play on special teams. Like, he's probably your best special teams player. You're not cutting him because you have better players. You're cutting him because you have younger players. And that's, to me, that's the difference. It's not that there's more moves. It is that the goal behind the moves is very clear, and that is we're going to get younger. We're going to see what these guys have. We're going to try to win in the process, but you're not going to pay that little extra it takes to have a veteran at every key position. I think that's what the defining characteristic of this offseason is.
So earlier, they, as you talked about, waived JT Gray. We don't know where he's going.
They didn't waive him.
No, released him.
Yes.
My apologies. But what we've been reading is that he's not going to Denver, which I would have put probably a decent amount of money on early on.
Yeah.
And then they signed Koziah Izzard, defensive tackle. Today, they moved Jake Kaner to the active roster, signed Echo Leota. He was a defensive lineman, played with Carolina. In fact, last year in the week one blowout of the Saints in Carolina, he had a sack, three tackles for a loss, and a quarterback hit.
So that's where his sack came from.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. I saw he had one sack. I didn't realize it came against the Saints.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do feel like whenever the Saints sign someone, you can usually go back and find a game that like, oh, what were some of his better games that were against the Saints, right? Like Trey Palmer has like three touchdowns in his NFL career. Two of them are against the Saints.
Two of them were in 2023,
right?
One in each game. And
do you remember the first one? The first one was very...
Yes, after the fumble.
Well,
after the Taysom Hill fumble.
There was more
it?
To that. It wasn't Taysom. Don't put that on Taysom.
It was
Ike Yiadom intercepted a Baker Mayfield pass down at the one-yard line right at the end of the first half. It was like, finally, a break going the Saints' way. And then they had changed the definition of the rules for like, hey, if you intercept a ball and your momentum carries you into the end zone, we're no longer going to give you the ball at the 20. We're going to give you the ball at the 1. We're going to punish you for intercepting a ball. That's the only way you can look at it. Then, because of that, the Saints had to run a play, and they handed it to Adam Prentice,
yeah.
And he fumbled. The next play, Trey Palmer catches a touchdown over Ike Yiadom. He just went right back at him, right back at Yiadom. And that's where it was. So that was one of his touchdowns.
Yep. And he's had one in the final game.
Yeah, he should have had two in that game. He should have had two in that game. He stumbled on another one.
Right. And he didn't have no receptions in 24. He didn't play in one of the games, and he didn't have any receptions in the other. But
right.
You're right. It's you know, you see guys play, you know, and they go, hey, make a little mental note of that. Tommy Mellott, the wide receiver out of Montana State, He joins the Saints.
Well, he was a quarterback at Montana State.
I know. But
he has,
I mean,
like 49 career passing touchdowns to go with his 48 career rushing touchdowns, or it might be 39 and 38. I don't have the number in front of me, but he's going to get the new Taysom Hill treatment. Yeah, so
yes,
it was 39 passing, 38 rushing.
I think he's like, when those headlines came out, if I were him, I'd go, oh, dear gosh, no, please. How about, can I just be Tommy? Like, you're the next Taysom Hill? There's no such thing.
He also isn't like Taysom. Like, anytime you bring in a converted wide receiver or a converted quarterback to another position, you're going to get, oh, he's the next Taysom Hill. I actually think if you look at him play, he's a lot more like Julian Edelman. If you recall Julian Edelman,
sure.
He was a quarterback at Kent State. And then when he got to the Patriots, they converted him to a wide receiver, punt returner type player. That's more of the player he is. You're not going to be running. You're not going to be bringing him in there and treating him like a fullback. But it is interesting. It's an interesting decision. He was a draft pick.
Las Vegas, sixth round.
Yeah.
And so so that was today. And then they also signed who had already been kind of with the team, and that's Thomas Dimitroff, the consultant. He'd been the general manager of Atlanta 2008 to 20, helped them to their Super Bowl. He'd been with other teams, Bill Belichick, and everything. And he'd been around. This was not like, oh my, you know, came off the airplane. He was with the team here in Metairie and California as well. So, you know, it's just been.
He's basically taking that. So Dave Ziegler was in that role, you know, another former GM. And he went to be an assistant GM with the Titans. So that's kind of filling that spot.
Right. They also named their captains for the season. Eighth straight year for DeMario. 10th straight for Cam Jordan. For Alvin, it's his third time. He was 22, 24, now 25. And then Eric McCoy, third straight year captain. Zach Wood, long snapper, third straight year. And then three new wide receiver Brandon Cooks, kicker Blake Groupie, who we'll hear from later in the show, and safety Justin Reed. We talked to Trey Palmer, the Kentwood Kangaroo. Yesterday, we're going to hear from him. Also talked to Kai Kroger. Wanted to talk to him a little bit. And we also talked to Devon Valet. We actually discussed his name at the beginning of the interview. So
is it Valet?
Valet.
Okay.
And so
everyone's been saying it wrong.
Like the emphasis is on the va. Like I was okay. Like valet. Like it's not even that. It's valet. So we'll talk to him as he comes here and kind of gets started. And there's just been a ton of that kind of stuff. The Saints trying to make it seven straight season opening wins.
Longest active streak in pro football. I will say the Saints are the only team in the NFL that has announced captains and does not have a quarterback as a captain. Which is like, it's not surprising knowing the situation they're in, but like, that's how it's an unusual scenario to not have a quarterback be a captain on your team. And they are the only team in the NFL currently that has announced captains. There are several that haven't announced them yet.
Right.
The Ravens actually do it on a rotating basis. So it's kind of different every week. But that's an unusual thing for a team to not have a quarterback as its captain.
Two special teamers.
Yeah, right.
Two of your you know, your three.
And you cut one of the captains in JT Gray, who has been a captain each of the last few years. So
yeah, very much so.
It's a strange year. Blake Groupie's in there now, which good for Blake.
Yeah, but it's just been so. We're going to be a day off for a little bit today. The team was completely off, just like a normal Tuesday. And it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Arizona will get here on Saturday, and then a noon kickoff, as the Saints do, trying to make it seven straight. They beat Houston, Tampa, Green Bay, at Atlanta, Tennessee, and Carolina to get to this streak. And, you know, Arizona, we'll talk, you know, certainly about this game a lot more, but they're a much better football team than their 8-9 record indicates from last year.
Yeah, you know, it is funny because I feel like they were a lot better off when they were losing the opener every year. I mean, if you go back, like they were starting 0-2, and it was like, oh, the world's ending, and then they would make the playoffs. They would finish like 12-5. I've been telling people, like, I don't know how much people have been paying attention to Arizona over the last few years. They're not exactly appointment viewing for a lot of people. But that's a good football team. And they've added some really intriguing pieces. They're not going to have the rookie they drafted. He got hurt. Walter Nolan.
Yeah.
Trey McBride is the best tight end in the NFL that no one talks about. I mean, this guy is averaging like 100 catches and 1,000 yards a season. The only reason, you know, I think he's kind of under the radar is he only has five touchdowns over the last 2 years. But
it's
no,
kind of like the opposite of Juwan Johnson.
Exactly.
Juwan Johnson just goes out, gets his touchdowns. This guy gets his, he caught 111 balls last year. They had a tough, Arizona finished 8-9. Now they start off 1-4, 2-6. They got to start the season. Now remember, no, we don't know then what we know now, but at Buffalo, that ain't no fun. The Rams, Detroit, Commanders, at San Francisco, at Green Bay. That's where they, how they had to start last year. So, you know, we'll see. It's a big one. It's back to back, really back to back to back. When you think about the NFC West with Arizona and San Francisco, and it'll be the gold uniforms that'll be coming out for their game on Sunday. So look forward to that as well.
Yeah, they didn't make anyone wait around for the gold unis, so we'll get an early indicator on what those suckers look like. But you know, I'm curious if they look in live action. They kind of look khaki to me. I don't know.
Yeah, gold's a tricky color.
It's a tough color. I think that's one of the reasons they haven't gone back to it for so long, because it's a tough one to get right.
Right, it's a tricky color because the gold, there's an actual, you know, Saints gold. It's just it is tricky.
And it's the type of color that changes hue when it gets sweaty. Which is, it's a tough one. I don't know how you get that, but it's going to look different when it's sweaty.
That is the second or third time you've mentioned sweat in this show already. We're only in
block one. It's an important part of my life.
All right. You've hit the quota.
Big Sweat is sponsoring this show.
Mike Haas, Jeff Nowak. It's the Bullseye Saints Hour. We will start listening to some of these guys that we talked to, you know, in the locker room yesterday, getting ready for the season opener. It's the Bullseye Saints Hour right here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back, Mike Haas, along with Jeff Nowak, sideline reporter, as well as Charlie Long in the booth for the Saints Hour, the Bullseye Saints Hour. And in the locker room yesterday, talked to one of the new wide receivers. He was a seventh-round pick in Denver. Saints traded for him, gave up a fourth round in 26 and a seventh round in 2027. He's older. He's 27 because between high school and college, he took a two-year mission to Samoa. So I'm talking about Devon, and you'll see how the interview begins, because this is how I start a lot of interviews. Yeah. I go, all right, first off, I do play-by-play. How do you say your name? So let's listen in.
Is it Vele or Vele?
It's a Vele.
Vele.
Yeah, Vele.
So not V-A-Y.
No, but it's fine. I'm used to it.
No, because it's a big thing, because I'm the guy that's saying the name. I guess just the process, when you kind of take me through the process of kind of learning and hearing, you know, this was going to happen.
Oh, I mean, it was definitely a surprise, but it's one of those things. I understood it's a business at the end of the day. It's, you know, we know what we sign up for. So, you know, we've been coming along well. You know, the program here has accepted us openly, and so me and my family are happy to be here, be a part of this culture.
To come into this wide receiver room that I already thought was pretty well full, but you can see the mentality of what they're trying to do with this wide receiver room.
Oh yeah, no, I can tell it's a veteran group here. We got great players, and a lot of them, you know, especially with me being only in my second year, I'm learning a lot from the vets. So, you know, these guys open me open arms, and you know, I just want to help and contribute where I can and learn, understand this culture better, so I can find my place here.
Are there any similarities, you know, between Sean and Kellen, or is it just kind of verbiage, or are you kind of having to learn from start?
I feel like it's a little bit more of learning from start. Sean, obviously, everybody knows his play calling style is a lot of words, a lot of plays, tells everybody what to do. But here, you know, they simplify it to where it's a lot more memorization. They have one words for a lot of the things that we have here. So it's definitely an adjustment for me to make, but it's one that's pretty easy.
I was going to say, that would be better than the other way around, where if you were here and you're going to Sean's system, it'll be much different.
Yeah, no, for sure. I just have to simplify my mind a little bit when learning the playbook here and not have to overthink a lot of things like the way Sean's offense was.
Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
So there is Mr. Vele, you know, and so looking forward to that. And, you know, I think there are 9 wide receivers. I think I might have said 8, or maybe that's the interview with Trey Palmer, which is coming up. 6 on the active, 3 on
practice squad.
On the practice squad, because of Tommy Mellott. I guess if you'd have said that, if we'd have had this discussion before camp, would that number have been high for you? It's high for me.
6? No, I mean, it's a normal number, right? Like 6 wide receivers, you'd like to get more out of somebody on special teams if you're going to keep 6. Like, that's my only problem with keeping 6 is, other than Shahid, I don't think any of them are going to be primary returners or, you know, gunners or jammers. Like, I don't know what you're getting out of, you know, and the problem is, okay, so Olave is not a special teamer, Shahid's not a special teamer, Cooks isn't a special teamer. You're keeping all of those guys. I don't think Valet is going to be a special teamer. So you just, it's just a lot of people who you need to get on the field to catch passes to contribute. And that's usually when you would say, hey, we have a six wide receiver, it's going to be a primary special teamer. And I don't think that's what they have.
We spent a lot of time, at least in my estimation, thinking about the running back situation. Was Kendre going to be the two? You know, Valus Jones kind of worked his way into that spot. And then I go back to week 18 with Spencer Rattler in Tampa in that first half. And clearly his best 30 minutes of football. He played up good in that second half of the Washington game, but not as good as that Tampa game. And that was, give me the short out. Give me the easy six-yard pass. I don't need to make anything big. Down and outs to tight ends, big wide receivers. Yeah. And all. Hey, maybe that's how they'll move the ball early. You know, I don't know.
He was on time. Like that. Yeah. That was the thing in that game where he didn't look sped up. He looked on time. And in the second half, he looked sped up, right? Like he looked like he was a little overwhelmed. And that's why that half of football felt like it was his best. I still think if you go back and watch the Raiders game, that was his best complete game of football, and he just got let down by a lot of people throughout the course of that game, whether it be penalties or drops or whatever. But no, I've said this, like, I know a lot of people kind of were up in arms about the fourth round pick and the value of the trade and whatnot. I just think when you add Valet to that room, knowing what you know about it, like, it suddenly becomes a very diverse, intriguing wide receiver room. Without him in there, it was of kind of a one-trick pony wide receiver room. And you kind of were like, eh, this is gonna be effective in certain instances, and then it's going to be very frustrating in a lot of instances where it's like, I just need a tough, contested four-yard catch for a first down. I just want to be able to – go watch that LSU game. What did they do for a touchdown in that LSU game? They threw everyone on one side and said, here's the big guy that you're not going to be able to guard one-on-one. Good luck. They threw it to him. Touchdown. That's not a very complicated play call, but it still can work because you have the horses to make it work. And that's where I feel like whether you care more than you need to about the age, I know people do, the price tag, I know people do, like, he's adding an element to this offense that they just did not have.
Right. And he had been strong in at least his rookie year, you know, making first downs, you know, catching touchdowns in the red zone. So hard worker, again, a little more mature for, you know, from an age standpoint, just because he's 27. Now, some of this is really due to injuries, but they have 11 offensive linemen on the active, right, if my math is correct. And Awesome Richards, Dylan Ray Dens, who spent time with him, you know, all the way through, was an offseason pickup. Right. Luke Fortner was a part of that trade with Jacksonville. Xavier Truss and, you know, Awesome Richards. I take it back. There's 10 because they got Richards. Richards is a backup twice. Torricelli Simpkins is the other. I mean, that's just a lot of new names at this juncture. I'm not saying they're not, you're making your team better. That's what you do. You make your team better. It's just that part of it, man, that's just a lot of new names.
Yeah, and I mean, the biggest question mark to me is Awesome. We haven't seen him on the field once with the Saints, and he's not just on your roster now. Like, you claim Xavier Truss, he's not going to play. You're going to keep him around. He's going to be inactive. He's a guy that you're going to try to develop, and maybe, I don't know, maybe down the line he's a guy you put on the field. But if one of Banks or Fuaga goes down, he's the guy that goes in. Right now they have one backup tackle that's like has any type of clout at the NFL level, and it's him. For both tackle spots, he's only played on the left side. So that's, to me, that's the biggest wild card outside of the starting lineup. If you're trying to say, like, hey, how could this get real ugly real fast? And be like, if you have some bad luck with injuries at the tackle spots, whew, woof.
Right.
That's not even to say Awesome can't get it done. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah. Landon Young went down. He was your, you know, kind of switch tackle who could play both left and right, injured and out.
I guess Xavier could also play tackle. Xavier Truss is listed as a tackle and a guard. He's 6'7", but I mean that'd be asking a lot of a UDFA.
Well, and a lot of them, you know, they haven't spent time, right? They just don't have the reps that you would want to have, but it kind of is what it is. So we heard from Devon, and we're going to hear from Trey Palmer, the other wide receiver, the local product from Kentwood, Louisiana. We'll talk and hear what he has to say about getting into this offense and this packed wide receiver room. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour. Mike Haas along with Jeff Nowak. Keep it right here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour. Mike Haas, Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak, working your way towards the Arizona Cardinals noon at Caesars Superdome. And then following that, the San Francisco 49ers, the part of this four-week sleep in your own bed, two preseason games, two regular season games. And we talked to Trey Palmer. He knows about coming back home, right? The 2018 state champ is part of the Kentwood Kangaroos, spent 3 years at LSU, finished at Nebraska, then signed with Tampa Bay, where he spent 23 and 24. Saints were awarded him off of waivers. So talk to Trey Palmer about coming home.
I guess just that, right? I mean, Kentwood Kangaroo, I do the play-by-play with Deuce, right? And so you're not just Trey Palmer. You're Kentwood Kangaroo Trey Palmer. And when you would catch a pass for Tampa, so happy to be saying it here, that thought process when you heard that you were coming home.
Just blessed to be, come home, get picked up, get claimed, and ready to just put on for the city.
How do you feel? I was just talking to Devon about this offense, and especially the wide receiver room that I thought was pretty well stacked, but it almost tells you kind of the foundational philosophy of what they want to do. Like eight wide receivers, man, that's a big part of this offense.
Yes, sir. Just, help get the ball out, help Spencer out, give him multiple targets to throw to, and really just be explosive on offense and make big plays.
Speed kills, right?
Always.
What's the family ticket count? Like, it wasn't different than Tampa, right? Hey, we need X now. We need X.
It's really ain't no tick count because, like, I just give that to my people, and I got a specific person to handle all the tickets, so they just go through that. Really, they already have their own tickets, so just stay happy to be here. You know, some people got season tickets and already, so.
Looking forward to it?
Yes, sir. Very blessed. Ready to put on.
And we'll see. As we talked about, 2023, he has four overall touchdowns. In 23, he had two receptions and a touchdown in week four. Then in week 17, he had four receptions and a touchdown. He also has done some punt returning, but really just saw his playing time drop off in Tampa. In 23, he had 718 offensive snaps in 17 games. And then last year, just 305 offensive snaps in just two fewer games. So Saints made the most of it, claimed him off waivers and got awarded him.
Yeah. And I mean, the Bucs, I think it's more of a product of them just kind of being loaded at receiver right now. They're getting Godwin back. Evans is still there. They drafted Igbuka out of Ohio State. They just have a lot of bodies. And so I'm curious to see how the Saints use Trey. I don't know if there's going to be a role for him early in the year. I think, you're going to try to get Valet. Valet. You're going to try to get Valet.
Do it like an Italian.
Up to speed. It does sound very Italian. up to speed and in the offense, probably in a certain package of plays, like right away. With Trey, I think it's going to be a little bit more of a slow burn.
Let's pause 10 seconds to let stations identify themselves here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. So we were talking about Trey Palmer. He did do some punt returns. We hadn't really talked about the returners because they've always had 15 guys back there. You never really know. And, it's not like it's written in stone, but Shahid is listed right now as the number one punt returner. Then Ugo Amadi, and kick returning will be Valus Jones and Kendre Miller. No big surprise. They had so many people that they kind of tried back there. But there's not that many that are still on the active roster.
Yeah, I have been surprised they haven't tried to get a look at Tipton as a punt returner. Because he's kind of the odd man out, too. Like, you're talking about Trey. Like, how are you going to use Trey? How are you going to use Tipton? How are you going to get all these guys in the field? And so I wouldn't be surprised if Tip is an inactive. Because I think you have all these receivers. A couple of them are going to be inactive.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At least week one. And you kind of have to bake in, hey, there's going to be some injuries. You're going to have opportunities for guys to work up. But Ugo Amadi is not the guy that I would have looked at in the preseason and been like, ah, here's a punt returner for you. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they deploy Shahid because he is so important to your offense. Are you going to have him back there on every punt return? Are you going to save him for some of the more premium punt return opportunities? Right. Like the return for a touchdown he had last year, like you know there's an opportunity for a good return there because they're punting from their own goal line, right? So anytime you're in that situation, sure, but when they're punting from midfield and you just need someone who can go out there and make a good decision, is that going to be something you rely on Shahid or is that something that Amadi does? I don't know. I do like the idea of having the two running backs return the kickoffs because it just forces you to, A, kick to one of them, and B, either one of those guys can get upfield and lay a block. Whereas if I kick away from Shahid, then I at least have the luxury of saying, yeah, now Shahid has to go block somebody.
Do you think – I don't know if I felt much of a difference with the new rule as far as kicks were concerned. I do know that those that were returned, I don't remember seeing a ton past the 35. That's now become a pretty good – hey – you know, if you get past the 35, you've done more than your job.
It's amazing how many of those kicks go to exactly the 35 and don't get an inch further. You know, and it was kind of amazing last year because it always seemed like they got to the 30. I think this year, one of the biggest differences that people aren't going to talk about in the return game is the actual kickoff. Because before this change, the kickoff was like, you're going to kick it high in the air and then try to get it to like the one if you want to force a return, or you're just going to kick it to the end zone, which is what a majority of the time happened. In this case, the best kickoff is not a sky ball to the one. It is kind of a knuckleball to like the 15 that checks up high. It's almost like a kick serve in tennis because the defense, the coverage gets to start running the second the ball hits the ground. So the longer you can create between that bounce and the returner fielding it, the better chance you have to pin them deep. Blake did a great job of that in the final preseason game. He had like at least two or three that just checked up perfectly, and they stopped him within the 35-yard line every time. But then you saw Charlie. He had a couple where he was just kind of a line drive right to the guy at the goal line, and that's the best-case scenario for the returner because they're going right as you're going. So it's just kind of – that strategy is going to be interesting to watch because there's going to be – a handful of different types of kicks you're going to want to break out as like a change-up, you know, once they start creeping up.
Right,
you know?
They'll be directional, right? We talked to Phil Galliano, and sometimes I ask him, what's the perfect kick? Well, you know, there's probably two. One of which you just talked about, that to me, if it kind of knuckleballs in the middle of the field and both those guys are wondering who's going to get it, right? But then you'll have more of a directional kick. So I think
that's going to become as important as the actual coverage is kind of my point.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. And I think it'll become an art like anything else. Like you've been for years, I just go out and kick it as beautifully high.
Yeah, right.
And now I got to go kick it as ugly as possible and hope that it, you know, bounces high like an onside kick did back in the day, and you know squibbles around. But you got to get it. The penalty for not getting in that landing zone is a penalty.
I am always I'm amazed at how few times we've actually seen that happen though. I expected it to be a lot more frequent.
I think the penalty's so impactful. Yeah. They're like, if I'm going to miss it, I'm going to miss it at the 25, you know, the 15, not the 20, you know, on the other side of the 20 in that landing zone.
Well, but that's why, like, I've heard people say, oh, why doesn't Justin Reed do kickoffs? It's because if he can kick it, well, 19 times out of 20, great. But that one time where they start at the 40, you'd be like, why the heck is he even out there? Like, that's why you don't say, we're going to get an extra person who can make a tackle on the field, because you don't trust him for that 20th time out of 20.
So, I talked to Blake Groupie. We're going to talk to and listen to him next about his field goal kicking. Not so much about kickoffs, but what a year and what a training camp he has had. Blake Groupie and the Bullseye Saints Hour continue after this break. You are listening to the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour, an inside look at the black and gold. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, working our way towards Sunday in Arizona. High noon, Caesars Superdome. Looking forward to the crowd and just getting into regular season football for Blake Groupie. It is his third year. He's 26 years old, so I had a chance yesterday to sit down with Blake and just kind of talk about kind of the incredible offseason OTA training camp that he enjoyed.
I don't know how to talk about your training camp and preseason with just exceptional. I mean, when you came in this camp and OTAs, and you know you still had Charlie here, right? What was your mindset coming in?
Really nothing any different than I feel like what it's been in the past. Other than just like I know I put the work in the off season and coming with reps and games, the more games you play, the more comfortable you get. I mean, it is practice, so going out there and developing and working on the things I need to and that I know I need to get work in and just helping prepare myself for week one, really just kind of stacking days.
And stacking kicks. I don't know if there's a thing. I mean, I assume there is a zone, right? I mean, the goalpost to you must look wider, right? Or the thought of missing doesn't even come into play.
Yeah, I mean, always aiming down the middle. We had some windy days out here. We had a rainy day. Had some days.
You still remember that rainy day, don't you?
Had some days in the indoors. So I feel like I've got tested in camp, and we came out better because of it. So. Just ready to, you know, keep stacking days and keep building throughout the season because it's a big year for us as a team and me personally.
Why do you remember the rainy day?
That was my miss. That was my miss. So, yeah.
That's kind of where I was going next. Do you play golf?
I do.
You do? Mm-hmm. And so I get people always ask, you know, from a size standpoint and strength of leg, I go, it's not necessarily about that, right? I mean, it's you can see a lot of small golfers hit the ball like, you know, it's leg speed, right?
Yeah.
It's your arc, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of similarities there when you look at like your routine or your, you know, pre-shot process, pre-kick process, that kind of stuff. But you know, I've always been a proponent of size doesn't matter. So, you know, I just kind of go out there and do my thing that I've always done. So,
I think the thing that Rizzi said about you when we were asking him when he was special teams coach, it's like he says, if watch his right leg, your right leg gets so far back that you're starting from a spot that you are able to really generate an amazing amount of leg speed. Did that come naturally, or was that something you worked on?
No, I mean, I don't know how you can necessarily work to get your foot farther back.
I mean, you can stretch it and keep going and getting it back there and getting it back there. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a you know, we work mobility, we work strength, we work all those kind of things. That's just kind of something that I didn't necessarily have to work on or develop. It just kind of, you know, happened that way. I see some pictures sometimes and I'm like, holy cow, you know, no wonder why, like, you know, my back might be a little sore after the game. But yeah, I mean, that there's definitely some things that I do, you know, different and uniquely to that, you know, for me compared to other guys. So, you know, we all do it in our own way, and that's kind of mine.
So final question, I've always felt this way, but though I feel like kicking has changed. It used to be 39 and in, that's automatic. You got to make them. 50 plus used to be, hey, you know, we appreciate whatever you can do there, but you made your money on 40 to 49, right? That's where you made your living. Is that, first off, it's part of the first two part question. Is that still accurate?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that is still accurate. I mean, those are the ones, those are your bread and butter. That's where your highest percentage of kicks are going to be from. But however, I mean, we all seen it. Like there's, you know, there's longer and more kicks from longer distances, you know, almost ever. Even like watching college this last week, I mean, there's guys hit bombs in college that didn't necessarily used to be the standard. But, you know, there's a lot of good guys across the league that are making a lot of, you know, long kicks and doing some great things. And so, yeah, you know, the average field goal is definitely maybe getting a little longer. But I do believe 40 to 49 is where you make your money. But, I mean, you have to be able to make those long ones nowadays. And so those are, you know, we work those and I just treat them like any other kick, really. You know, go out there just, you know, I'm always trying to hit it well. So, but it is the game's changing. You know, it's very easy to see.
Because I do feel like the 50 plus, it's not a land yap anymore. It's a pretty, they almost, it's not like it's inside the 40, but man, you got to have a great percentage there.
Yeah, you could almost say like that your money's made in your 40 to, you know, 40 to almost 55. Like it's not just 40 to 50 anymore. I'd probably add back to the 55 now with as many attempts as we're getting nowadays.
When you watched Little from Jacksonville on that preseason game, what was going through your mind?
Yeah, Cam's a good buddy of mine. So, you know, I was chatting with him leading up to it and after the game. I mean, that was an unbelievable kick. So, I mean, 70 yards. I've seen him do it in person before, and So it's awesome to see him, you know, be able to do it on a national stage. And it only sucks it was only preseason, but I know he'll probably get another opportunity, and I can't wait to see what he can do.
What would you attempted? Have you? I mean, what's the longest one? Even just by yourself on a high school field?
Yeah, I've done it once. I will say I've only probably attempted it once. You know, I've always said, like, you know, you put me on the field and I'm going to have a chance to make it. But that is a long kick. So,
well, think about it. I mean, you're never going to see it in the end of a half.
Yeah.
Because when you watch it, he's kicking from his own 40. That's where they're snapping. Yeah. You know, it's insane.
Yeah, it's a long one. You know, I've always said the ball, you know, travels different in Florida, but Cam's got an unreal leg strength. So, you know, you never know. I'm sure I'll have my opportunity to hit something long someday. And, you know, I just hope I'll be ready for it.
Hell of a preseason, hell of a training camp, man. Just keep it going.
Will do. Thank you.
And that's it. Just keep it going. You know, you want him to have the season from an extra point that he had in 2023, not that his percentage was bad last year. He was 31 of 33, but they scored 7 more touchdowns.
I think we're going to...
He was 40 of 40 in 2023.
I think we're going to have to get some scientists on this ball traveling different in Florida thing. What are we talking about here?
Well, we're going to find out.
It's not like Colorado. Like, what are we doing?
The humidity just kind of keeps it afloat somehow.
Yeah, right. It just kind of catches up on the air and trots across the humidity.
We play in Miami. ain't going to be a whole lot of fun down on the sideline, I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, if he makes it from 70 in Miami, like, I guess the ball does move differently in Florida.
From 40 to 49 last year, Blake was 7 of 8. From 50-plus, he was 6 of 8. And it is true.
Six kicks from 50-plus, the most by a Saints kicker in team history.
Six makes?
Yes.
Did not know that. There you go. So he's done a lot, man. Done a lot. No problems getting into the building anymore. Everything's just hunky-dory.
Yeah, the security guards know who he is now.
Yes.
So, yeah, he's got that covered.
He is. Take a break. This is the Saints Hour. Mike Haas along with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. The Bullseye Saints Hour, an inside look at the black and gold, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints. That's Bullseye here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back. Mike Haas along with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. We heard from Blake Groupe. Now we will talk to his special teams teammate, that is Kai Kroeger, who ended up beating out Matthew, although he didn't. Matthew Haball had been released before he came. Matthew Haball
still beat him.
Yeah, and then James Burnip. So Kai Kroeger will be the Saints punter this year out of South Carolina. Talk to him to get ready for this season.
Mentally, when you were in that third preseason game, the last preseason game, and there weren't a whole lot of punts coming, were you like, man, I need to, and I don't know how you were looking at it, you know what I mean? Yeah,
honestly, those are probably the hardest games, just because we don't have to worry about a whole playbook and all that, but kind of staying loose throughout the whole game is like one of the hardest things. And so when you're not punting at all, you're just kind of waiting, and then you get third downs and you think you're about to go, and then first down, and then you kind of have to mentally reset. But obviously, I don't mind those games because that means we're in a good position, our offense is doing better. But yeah, those are mentally draining more than anything else.
But the fact that you held, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, whether you knew or didn't know or whatever, it does point to, hey, you know, if this is our guy, what's the relationship with him, Blake? That must have felt good.
Yeah, I take great pride in my holding. I think I've done a good job, and being able to hold for Blake has been awesome. Charlie as well. But yeah, Blake and I have had a good connection so far, and we've done great in the preseason. And I take pride in what I do there. And I was very happy to get that opportunity in the first half to hold those few field goals.
This battle in general, it's tough, right? A couple of SEC guys, you know what James has done in the past, right? What was the difference for you? Is it just the preseason games, net average? I mean, just kind of, you know, net average is, you talk to Phil Galliano, it's net average.
Yeah, and that's definitely the biggest thing. I don't know exactly what went on in the process, but I think just making the most out of every opportunity I had was something that contributed, and I think the holding was a big part as well. And, you know, in my mind, I'm the best holder out there, and I think that plays a big role too. And I think just overall how I carry myself and interact with the other guys, I think all those things together. I mean, I'm not in the heads of the coaches and whatnot, but if I had to put something on it, I would point to those things.
When they told you, right? I can't imagine. What was it like?
I don't know if words do it justice, especially for me growing up. I was the biggest Saints fan. I had Drew Brees, Thomas Morstead jerseys all over my house. I actually saw an old photo the other day on my old Instagram from 2012, and it was just a picture of my Saints jersey. And I said, "Who dad?" is the caption. So for me, it was a surreal moment. I called my parents, and, you know, they're super emotional and all that. So it's a dream come true, but obviously it's just a start for me, and I'm super excited for the season to get going.
And then possibly week two, you're going to see Mr. Moore said.
Exactly, yeah. Super excited for that one, definitely. That'll be a surreal moment. But, yeah, just looking forward to this first week and getting things going.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Kai Kroger, 6'4", 5 years at South Carolina. The Saints are, a lot of things going on. He's most anxious to get the roster picture settled. He's in a suit on the roster.
Yeah, it
right
looks
now.
Like a high school photo. Yeah.
And so he also, in his years in South Carolina, he was 7 of 10 passing, so fakes, 3 touchdowns. In 22, he was 4 of 4, 107 yards and 2 touchdowns. But as we talked about the net average and preseason is preseason. You can take it for what it is. His net average in preseason was 42.3, and the Saints last year's net was 40.4. And you go, well, that's 2 yards. That's the difference of being in the top 5 in the NFL and in the bottom 2 in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. When you started playing that, I assumed he was going to be Australian or something.
That's right. Aren't they
like,
all?
Like every punter, at least half the punters in the NFL have Australian accents. The last 2 Saints punters have had Australian accents. But, one thing that he mentioned, the game where he punted one time, right? It is funny. Like, it's one of the things that you see being down on the sidelines that you definitely don't get watching on TV is, like, every time the ball is in, like, field goal range, suddenly the kickers are like going, they're going. And Blake is like kicking into the net. And same with the punters. Like they're just constantly warming up. And then it's like, oh, they're not punting. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I'll sit down. And the funniest game for that was Green Bay. And it was like 30 degrees. And Blake's like just trying to stay warm. And he had a great warm up. I remember thinking in warm ups, oh, he's gonna knock one through from like 60 in this ice cold day. And then he just kept every time they would get the ball, he would start warming up. Nothing. The entire game. He kicked off to start the game, did nothing the rest of the day. It's such a weird, weird life to lead where it's like you're constantly warming up for something that never happens.
And sometimes it's okay and sometimes it's not okay, especially
right.
if you're the punter.
Right.
So literally just a couple of minutes here. You look at this game and the first 4, Spencer Rattler starts. I mean, if you had to pick one thing that you're most interested in where this team makes an improvement, where is it?
Well, first, I'm just glad we're at the point where I can stop answering questions of how do you think this team is going to do, and we can just start talking about how they did, right? Because I'm just tired of the prognostications, and I would like for nothing more than all the negativity to be completely wrong, and we'll see how that goes. I need to see this team run the ball. I do. And if you can get Alvin Kamara and a legitimate RB2 tandem working with him, then I think you have a chance. If you can't run the ball, then this is going to be a long, 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 long season.
What about stopping the run?
That's a whole – I think they'll be fine on defense. I'm honestly not that concerned about defense. I think they'll be okay. I just think there's so many questions on offense. If you can cover those up with an effective run game, things get so much easier.
Right. Take some pressure off Spencer. Don't
exactly.
get any
everything,
third.
Everything is
simpler. Everything is
easier. You control the clock. You move the ball. You get first downs. If you can't, ugly.
We will start finding out Sunday at noon. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth, Jeff Nowak, of course, Saints sideline reporter. Looking forward to the season. See you at Caesars Superdome. This has been the Bullseye Saints Hour. Join us next week. We'll take a look at what happened against Arizona, and we'll preview San Francisco. This has been the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
Do that.